Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
My guests today are Adrian Burton, the Chief Information Officer of the Health Resources and Services Administration in the Department of Health and Human Services, and Kathy Ganey, the Director of the Office of Human Resources, also in the Health Resources and Services Administration. Adrian, Kathy, thank you so much for taking the time to join me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So this is part of our special edition of Ask the CIO, where we're kind of doing a two-for-one, right? We're talking about technology, talking about human resources and human capital management, and bringing it all together. So let me just start at the beginning. The reason why we're talking with HRSA today is you guys are doing some really interesting work where you're ensuring that the CIO and the Director of Human Resources are really working together to ensure HRSA can meet its mission most effectively, most efficiently. So let me start at the beginning. Let's discuss how you guys are working together and how, you know, the personnel, the technology, all that fits together to make sure that the workers are qualified. Kathy, you want to jump off?
Sure. Just so you know, our HR office is new. We were established 5 years ago. Prior to that, our HR work was being done by another entity. So we spent the first 3 years building up our operations, policy, procedures, training our staff. And over the last 2 years, we've tried to become more strategic. And one of those important strategic opportunities was in recruitment. So working with IT, we do a pre-consult meeting with our hiring managers and our HR specialists. We review position descriptions to ensure that it meets the needs of the organization. We determine the most effective hiring options for the IT jobs and discuss the qualifications that are needed by the applicants. We've found that these meetings have been very successful in helping us to identify and refer really good candidates to the IT selecting officials for consideration. I can also talk a little bit. We also use subject matter expert panels for the IT because of how specialized the needs are of that office. We try to, for the higher level IT jobs, we actually collaborate with subject matter experts throughout the entire hiring process. We get them in right from the beginning, and we've noticed a really good quality of candidates come out from that.
And when you talk about subject matter experts, for instance, as an example, cybersecurity, everybody needs cyber workers. You bring in maybe current cyber workers at HRSA and say, okay, what are we looking for in this next person or people that we're hiring?
Exactly.
Do these subject matter experts, they may not know much about the hiring process or may not have much experience in hiring, but they're going to at least tell you, don't do this or do this in terms of the types of people. You know, maybe they need to have this type of certification, or this is a, you know, a person who's good with, you know, the keyboard versus the strategy side. Is that the type of conversation that happens?
That is the conversation. And our HR specialists, we have like over 70 different series that we handle within HRSA. So they don't have all the technical expertise. So together they can guide through the hiring process. And we have noticed really good outcomes with this.
Adrian, jump in a little bit from your perspective, the subject matter experts, the working, the pre-consult meetings. A lot of times hiring managers go, I don't have time for this, just do it, Kathy. But this is a little different, isn't it?
It is different because we have a really good collaboration between HR as well as IT. And a lot of my folks are the ones that are the subject matter experts that are reviewing the candidates before it'll go to the hiring manager.
And from the perspective of you, when you're being asked to give up, if you will, for an hour, for a half hour, for a few hours, that person, in the end, you're getting a better candidate, and it's probably worth that trade.
Oh, absolutely, because we want to make sure that we have really good candidates to choose from. So we're actively involved in the process.
Now, Kathy, let me broaden this out a little bit beyond the IT and hiring cyber workers and program and project managers and data scientists. Are you also using this similar setup for non-IT positions throughout HRSA?
Yeah, absolutely. We have, when we first took over our HR office, this was one thing we were really trying to do to get the hiring managers involved in the process. And at first, it was really difficult to get them involved in the process because they have other work that they, you know, that they're responsible for. But as they would see the quality of the candidates coming out onto the certificate based on them starting the process from the beginning, it has become easier to get them involved, and they really do play a key role.
Now, is this process, here comes the IT question, right? Is this a paper-based process, or are you guys doing some sort of system or electronic approach to ensuring, like answering a series of questions, or how does the process work, or is it just meetings?
The beginning process is the meetings, face-to-face meetings. It's really good to have the HR staff located within the program areas because we get to know them and know their needs. Later during the recruitment process, we do have a lot of automated systems that actually help track through the recruitment process, and we can use the data from that system to make informed decisions and how we're going to be moving forward with future recruitment.
All right, good. I figured there was some technology in there, right? No one's ever paper-based anymore. Adrian, from your perspective, we talked a little bit about the types of candidates you're getting. Talk a little bit about the hiring process before, if you go back that far, before Kathy and her folks got on board and started going down this process. Is this much easier now?
Actually, since I've been at Hearst for the last 3.5 years, that's really just how the process has been here. So it's definitely, I've worked at other federal agencies, and the process here at Hearst is definitely easier and more collaborative.
All right. Well, good news there. One of the things about, from an HR perspective, is you got to have the tools to make all this happen. Kathy, you mentioned the processes, so some of it becomes automated, the data. So talk about what are your top priorities from a human resources perspective, and then we'll bring in Adrian in a little bit to talk the technology side of it.
From the human resources perspective, recruitment and retention are our biggest priorities. And I talked a little bit about some of the things we've implemented for the recruitment. And I was going to mention here also about our real-time recruitment report, which I mentioned earlier. That, just to give you a little bit more detail, we put all the recruitments into a system, and customers can see the status of their recruitment action all along the way. If anything changes to that, this action changes, the hiring managers are actually notified by email that these changes have occurred. And with this system, we're able to track the time to hire. We can see where their delays are in the recruitment process. And we can also, like I was saying, use that data to make informed decisions. We might have a hiring manager that always wants to recruit all sources, but 90% of the time, they're picking internal candidates. And when we recruit all sources, it takes a long time. We get numerous applications, and they're not utilizing those certificates. So we can sit down with the hiring managers and actually have decisions based on data moving forward. So this has really changed the way we do recruitment. And I know retention, with the retention area, we work really closely with Adrian's group on some of the ways she's retaining her staff, because it's really important once we get the IT people that we need to actually retain them.
3/4 of the battle is retaining them, right? I mean, it's one thing to get them through the door, but all the effort and all the work, if they leave after 6 months or a year, then you start the process over again, and that's where it becomes so costly. I want to go back, before Adrian jumps in, I want to go back to the process of recruitment. It's interesting that you talk about tracking in real time. How has that been working? And talk a little bit about, when I'm a hiring manager, an email pops up, and do I act? And talk about a little of the process behind that a little bit more if you can, Kathy.
Once the action comes to the HR office is when it's inputted into the system. And it goes through, the PD might have to be classified, or we have to do job analysis. So they see where it is in the process, and sometimes they do need to react. If we need them to review the job analysis, that how people are going to be rated against their application, then they will need to weigh in at that point. And we just found sometimes, I think, they used to think they'd send their vacancies to HR and it would just go in a black hole, and they couldn't see how long it would take, you know, to actually post the position and where we are in the process. So this is really helpful, and they know that they play a key role. The sooner we get feedback from them on certain things, the sooner the job can be posted, and the sooner they'll have someone, you know, new working in their office.
And you talk about measuring time to hire. I know over the, you know, early part of this last decade, the 2010s, well, I guess we'll call it, there was a big push from the White House to really improve time to hire. Where are you guys at with time to hire? Has it been improved by this process? And roughly how many days does it take you?
We are within the 80-day time frame for the majority of our recruitments. We do have another thing that we put in place. We call it our Ready, Set, Post, where we post a lot of the similar jobs, public health analysts, positions that we already have these packages put together, where we have had successful candidates brought into the agency. So bureaus and offices can look at those ready, set, post and be like, this is the job I want to do. And we can have that posted the next business day for them, which that has really cut down on a lot of, the, you know, some of those pre-recruit meetings don't need to happen. So it cut and the classification doesn't happen. So that really cuts down on the time frame.
Excellent. Now, let me bring in Adrian here. Now, the technology side of it. First, let's talk about the some of the things you're doing in the CIO's office to retain your employees. And we'll talk about the tech side.
Agree with Kathy that it's important to retain staff. So within IT, we focus a lot on the employee engagement and our employee viewpoint survey results. So when new employees are onboarded, HR performs a two-day orientation, which is really well received. I have about 100 employees that work for my office, and I hold quarterly new employee meet and greet sessions with new staff to get to know them. I bring in coffee and donuts, and we just chat. And I've just found that many people love HRSA's mission, which is to provide access to healthcare to underserved communities. In addition, many new people that are coming in from industry are interested in the work-life balance that we offer. I hold quarterly conversations with each of my divisions to see how I can help them to do their jobs better. And we also strive to have fun activities within my office. For instance, we just had an ice cream social, and the managers were responsible for scooping out ice cream for staff, and we ate over 7 gallons of ice cream.
Well, I didn't get my invite, so maybe next time I can get my invite. You know, the media needs ice cream, too. So, no, that's excellent. I mean, people lose sight of the little things, you know, kind of bringing people together and ensuring that we get a we work hard, but we can have some fun too. So that's an excellent story. From a technology perspective, how are you supporting Kathy's needs from a technology side? Meaning, the different systems are they running, and what kinds of back end systems, cloud, and et cetera, those type of things. And mobility, of course, is a big one.
From an IT perspective, we partner with HR on many infrastructure and HR specific applications. So, for example, we provide the network infrastructure and the collaboration tools to support HRSA's telework program. We have 80% of the people at HRSA actually telework. So, what we do is we partner with HR on the actual training to make sure that folks know how to use the technology to effectively telework. We're responsible for providing lightweight laptops for all the employees so that they're telework ready. So if there's some type of pending snowstorm, HR would notify employees to be prepared to telework. We assist in implementing HR-specific applications. So we'll work with HR to understand what their business requirements are. So what we'll do is we'll develop a business case, we'll look at different options, and as part of the process, we'll check other HHS operating divisions to see if the capability already exists within HHS. A perfect example is HR wanted an electronic performance appraisal system. And what we did is we reached out to other HHS operating divisions to see what type of systems already existed. So fortunately for us, NIH had an excellent system that met our needs, and currently we're piloting this system where we partner with NIH and HR, and my staff work with NIH to iron out any type of connectivity or two-factor authentication issues, and this is a good example of how we use existing shared services within HHS. In some instances, we, you know, we develop custom applications for HR, but like I said, it's a collaborative process.
That is a great example of an shared services, not just because you are using or piloting something, but because you said, hey, I'm actually going to reach out and see what's there versus, you know, the HHS CIO, Beth Kaloran, coming to you saying, hey, use this instead. Talk a little bit about that process, that when you reached out to NIH, were they open to saying, yeah, sure, use it, or what was their reaction?
Oh, they were very excited. Actually, I used to work at NIH for 12 years, so I know many of the CIOs that exist at NIH, but it was a great partnership where we reached out to them. They came out and performed a demonstration of the system. We talked about it internally within HRSA to see if this would meet our needs, and then what we did is we set up a pilot where we wanted to make sure that we wouldn't have any type of technical issues accessing the system, and so it's been a great partnership. I mean, the proposed cost is really relatively low. So it's just been a great partnership all the way around.
And Kathy, have you started to use it yet? Have you started to look into it?
Oh, yes. My group has been really involved in working with Adrian's group to get this off the ground. And like she said, we are starting a pilot in my office and her office and one of our bureaus, a small part of one of our bureaus will also serve in the pilot.
Adrian, any timing around the pilot that you can talk to? I mean, is it something, 3 months and then you'll decide how to move forward, or is it already in process?
It's in progress, and I believe the time frame is around July, but the whole goal is so that we can use the new electronic PMAP system for calendar year 2018.
From an infrastructure perspective, Adrian, you also talked a little bit about where these systems run and how you help them. Are you starting to look at things like the cloud? Are you starting to look at mobility when it comes to HR tools and capabilities?
Yes. Well, we use many of the HHS HR systems within HRSA. We have SharePoint services that we use that's provided by NIH, and that's platform as a service. And we recently implemented a cloud solution for position descriptions capabilities. So we've been working with HR on that. And then just from a, I'm just thinking about some of the other things that involve HR. We provide video services for HRSA, and most of the people actually reside in headquarters in Rockville, Maryland, and we have people that exist out in the regions as well. So we have 10 regions, and it's always been difficult to include the regions in activities such as our annual HRSA award ceremony. So it's something as simple as that. And so what we did in the last 2 years is that we included the regions in the ceremony using video teleconferencing. So what we did is we had this huge screen with all the 10 regions, and we were able to switch from one region to another. That was part of the script of the actual ceremony. And it really worked out well because the interaction was so seamless. And then when people received awards in the regions, it was really like they were physically at headquarters. So it just worked out really well.
It's so simple, right? You think about something like that. Why didn't we do this before? Why did this take us so long? And I think people appreciate the feeling of being included. Did you get pretty good feedback?
Oh, people really loved it.
Yeah, I can imagine so. Listen, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we can talk some more details about how you guys are working together. My guest is Adrian Burton, the CIO of the Health Resources and Services Administration in the Department of Health and Human Services, and Kathy Ganey, the Director of the Office of Human Resources, also in HRSA. I'm Jason Miller. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today are Adrian Burton, the CIO of the Health Resources and Services Administration in the Department of Health and Human Services, and Kathy Ganey, the Director of the Office of Human Resources in the Health Resources and Services Administration. We just kind of talked a little bit about the way your offices work together, some of the technology behind that. Key piece to any relationship, we also have to look back at the procurement side of the issue. Kathy needs new technology. She just can't throw the requirements over the so-called fence. And if Adrian, if you see kind of new technology that maybe could help Kathy out, you got to present it to her in a way that she understands the value and the return. So maybe talk a little bit about how that process works, how you guys do work together around areas like procurement and other kind of back office and administrative type functions.
Well, we have a robust FITARA framework and processes at HRSA, and it also integrates with the HHS FITARA framework. So, for instance, we have HHS that's working on an enterprise HR system, so we know about that, and so we'll factor that in terms of any decisions that are made. But all procurements, all IT procurements must go through me as the CIO as part of FITARA to ensure that there's no duplication in effort and that it aligns with the HHS and HRSA strategy. So certain procurement that's above a certain threshold has to go to the HHS CIO. So we really start these conversations early.
And one of the things about that, it's good to hear that FITARA is happening, obviously, at the agency headquarters level, but it's also being filtered down to your the bureau level. When Kathy has, for instance, a requirement or a need or something, describe maybe the process by how that works. Is it, again, a meeting? Is it a business case or all of the above?
It's all the above. Well, actually, Kathy and I both work for the chief operating officer, and so we have weekly staff meetings to talk about what's going on in the different areas. But we collaborate closely with HR, so in some instances, it may be someone on Kathy's staff. They want some type of capability. For instance, they may want some new SharePoint workflow or some custom application. They'll work with my folks, and then we'll develop some type of business case. We'll make sure, of course, that we have funding for it, and then actually go forward with the implementation.
Kathy, from your perspective, is this different than what it was, you know, a year, 2 years ago? FITARA, as people have said, is really a seminal type of law, and the impact is people are still kind of waiting for that law to happen. It sounds like it's happening.
It's definitely happening here. And like I said, we're new. We started from nothing, our HR office. So to have the technology that Adrian's group can bring to us is huge for us. You know, just basic requirements that we need to do. We can always go to her and count on her group to find a way. We have an idea and they can make it work for us.
Adrian mentioned the enterprise HR system that's, I think, happening at the department level. Talk a little bit about where HRSA fits into that effort, how you participate.
Sure. That is our personnel system. We actually have, it's like a three-tier. We have the payroll, the time and attendance, and the personnel system, and those are all serviced out of the at the department level. We're actually in the process of upgrading the system and integrating the time and attendance system into the new system that'll be coming out hopefully within the next fiscal year.
And how much of a change is that going to be for you guys from a technology perspective? Is anything going to change for you, Adrian? Is HRSA going to need any new technology or any new kind of infrastructure to support that?
Not really. What our main concern is any type of integration with some of the HHS systems and some of the systems that we have within HRSA. So they're different work groups at the from an HR business perspective as well as at the IT perspective. So the main thing is being able to exchange data with some of the other systems that we have within HRSA.
And for me, in my world, right now we have so many manual processes because the systems don't talk to each other. It's really going to be nice once the system's up and running. It'll save a lot of manual process time.
That is so important. People forget that automation piece. I mean, Adrian probably hears this all the time around cybersecurity, automate, automate, and automate. But people forget that, you know, if I have to input data or if I can't have data fields that automatically fill when, you know, I put in my name or something, that's going to be such a big lift. How far away are you guys from? And I know Adrian said maybe next fiscal, or I'm sorry, Kathy, you said maybe next fiscal year. When do you see that integration beginning?
I think we are scheduled, we and HRSA are scheduled maybe to go at the end of 18. I'm not really sure when the first group is going. I think it might be midway through fiscal year 18. But we are really excited about it.
One of the other pieces of this is the manual processes. Are there other areas of the HR process that you're looking at that you're looking for technology to help you right now, Kathy?
Adrian's group's actually working on a couple of things for us, like an employee and labor relations database. We're working on automating our outside activity forms. There's a lot. My office, my staff comes up with really good ideas, and then, again, we turn to IT to figure out how we can get these done. You know, like I said before, we started with nothing, so, you know, we get really excited when we can turn some of our paperwork into an automated system.
And Kathy, talk a little bit more about the technology behind some of these efforts, whether it's the database or the outside activity forms. The big buzzword around the government is agile and iterative development and user-centered design. I'm sure that all plays a role into working through with the HR group to get there, to take a manual process or at least an old process and modernize it.
Yeah, with ours, it's like, let's say the 520s, 521s, the outside activities, they are done, like reviewed, looked at everything manually. The 450 process, the financial disclosures, that's all a manual process that we are working with Adrian's group to actually get that automated, where hopefully the manpower that's needed to make these reviews will significantly reduce.
And Adrian, from your perspective?
So we're primarily using .NET capabilities, and as Kathy mentioned, with these different forms, we want to provide the ability to route these forms to get them, you know, electronically signed. And of course, we're using agile software development in terms of all the software that we develop here in HRSA.
When you talk about electronically signed, I got to go down that path because it's one of my favorite topics around ID management. Do you guys have a system already in place that can do the electronic signature, or how does that fit in with, for instance, the PIV card HSPD-12 implementation?
Yeah, so it integrates with our PIV card and HSPD-12. So the system, when you need to sign things electronically, what you can do is create your electronic signature, and then when you go to sign things, you'll have to enter in your PIV card and then put in your PIV card number, and then it'll automatically insert your electronic signature.
That's such a huge change. I imagine that the speed by which you can then get documents through the process versus printing them out and taking them to office, and it sits on your desk, and then it sits on Kathy's desk, and then it sits on someone else's desk. Are you seeing a big change? Are people used to this electronic signature piece?
Well, keep in mind that 87% of the people at HRSA teleworks, so in order for things to keep moving, you need to have that electronic signature capabilities.
So if you're waiting for someone sitting on someone's desk, you'd be potentially waiting for a long time, huh?
Right. Most things are routed electronically here at HRSA.
All right. Well, that's good. And because, as Kathy said, the HR office is fairly new, that makes not a lot of old legacy processes that you've had to change. You could probably hopefully start from new in some ways, too. Listen, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we can talk some more details about how you guys are working together. My guest is Adrian Burton, the CIO of the Health Resources and Services Administration in the Department of Health and Human Services, and Kathy Ganey, the Director of the Office of Human Resources, also in HRSA. I'm Jason Miller. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guests today are Adrian Burton, the CIO of the Health Resources and Services Administration in the Department of Health and Human Services, and Kathy Ganey, the Director of the Office of Human Resources in the Health Resources and Services Administration. One of the other pieces of this is the skill set, the workforce piece, right? Let's talk a little bit about what types of skill sets that is HRSA is most in need of. Maybe start with Kathy.
Based on HRSA's public health focus mission, our attention has been to concentrate on STEM positions. We not only do use the traditional means of hiring, we've been very successful with using a number of OPM's hiring flexibilities, such as the Return Peace Corps volunteers, Schedule A, veterans recruitment appointments, and also direct hire authorities. We found these vehicles allow our office to expedite the recruitment process once qualified candidates are identified. And we've worked closely with the IT office to create a user-friendly resume site to access resumes for review and consideration. That has been really helpful, that site, to collect people's interest in these other appointment authorities.
And the thing about that is, because HRSA, while it's not a huge component of HHS, it's as I think, as Adrian said, so many people work outside of the office through telework, having a database or one place to go to say, okay, I'm looking for this type of person, who else has recently hired for that position, they can maybe find it more easily.
Yeah, it has been really successful for us. And utilizing these hiring authorities, we can really quickly pick up people. We don't have to post announcements in all cases. The hiring authorities and flexibilities that OPM has provided have been really helpful to us.
Now, I know every agency that I talk to, every time I talk to a director of human resources or chief human capital officer like yourself, they're trying to hire the same STEM positions. Where can Adrian's group help you? We talked earlier about the working groups and the experts advisory board. But where else can Adrian's group help you kind of reach that next level of position or the next, find the right candidate?
Yeah, Adrian, actually, she does a lot of the outreach on her own. She'll come to us with really good candidates that we try to use these flexibilities to hire them. She has her people that she's worked with before or her own way to find qualified candidates. She's done a really good job with that.
Adrian, can you do a little talk about the way you recruit for certain technology positions?
Well, we use actually direct hire quite a bit because a lot of our positions require security. So that's a highly needed skill set from an IT perspective. So things such as security operation positions, as well as network and infrastructure positions, they all require security. And so anyway, that's part of that InfoSec position. So we use direct hire quite a bit. We do Schedule A. Here at HRSA, you're able to pick up multiple candidates on certs. And so that's just really been outstanding for us. So when we actually post a job, we're able to, instead of having seven different jobs, we could actually send out one vacancy and pick up seven people on one cert. So that's just been really helpful. Application development expertise is always highly needed here within HRSA. And so what we're doing is we're not just looking at senior level positions, but we're also starting to look at junior level positions for succession planning. And also because it's so difficult to find some of the skill set that we've just found out in some instances that maybe it's better to get someone at a junior level and train them instead of just always going for a more seasoned person.
Interesting. I think sometimes people lose sight of that. They're always looking for that that GS-15 when maybe a GS-11 or 10 would be a good fit, and they're trainable, so they don't come with any bad habits per se, right?
Right, and we have some students as well. I know that across HRSA we have quite a bit of students, and so we've actually picked up a few students along the way in terms of IT. And then I'm also on the board of Government Information Technology Executive Council, and we had a panel discussion where we had some folks from UMBC that actually talked about how you can partner with them to try to recruit, especially at junior levels.
People forget, again, that sometimes those colleges and universities have such an open door, especially in the D.C. area, which I know, you know, not everyone from that you're recruiting is in the D.C. area, but there are a lot of opportunities there. Kathy and Adrian, unfortunately, we're almost out of time, so this has been a fascinating conversation. Before I let you go, talk a little bit about it, if you could, each of you, just give me a brief kind of a thought about the future of technology and HR and how they fit together as you're going forward. If we'd have this conversation again in a year from now or 2 years from now, how much of a difference will things be? Let me start with Kathy.
Within 2 years, we'll have that new HR system available, and that'll give us a lot of data that we need right now that we can obtain. Also, working closely with Adrian's group and the people in my staff that every day are coming up with new ways to better the HR process for HRSA. So I'm hoping to have a lot of technology in place to make our lives easier, to be able to recruit and retain really talented people here at HRSA.
And Adrian?
For us, it's really about having that seamless technology with the integration between the different systems and also having the infrastructure and the mobility to support the HRSA staff.
Very nice. Now, Adrian's going to stick around, and we're going to continue our conversation and talk just IT, but we're going to let Kathy go. So let's thank Kathy Gainey, the Director of the Office of Human Resources at the Health Resources and Services Administration in the Department of Health and Human Services. And, of course, thank Adrian for her time, and she's going to stick around. So, Kathy, thanks so much for your time.
Okay, thank you very much.
We have to take a break. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest for this part of the show is Adrian Burton, the Chief Information Officer of the Health Resources and Services Administration in the Department of Health and Human Services. Adrian, we just spent the whole early part of the show talking with Kathy Gainey, the Director of the Office of Human Resources at HRSA, talking about how you guys work together. For this part of the show, we're just going to talk about IT. We don't need to talk about the HR stuff anymore. This is a kind of a return engagement for the IT part of the show for you. You were last on the show back in January 2016, and at the time, we talked about business intelligence and IT roundtable and VPN. Give me an update on where things are. I know cybersecurity is always a big one there, too. So maybe let's start with cyber, since the government just suffered through the WannaCry ransomware attack. How'd you guys do?
Security, of course, is a big focus, and I must say that HHS did an amazing job during the recent ransomware WannaCry event. We knew about the event early on because of our security tools, and we were just really well prepared, and we had robust processes and procedures in place. And communication this time was just really great at all levels within HHS, both internally between the different operating divisions in HHS and also externally to the customers that we support. So I really thought that we did an outstanding job for that. And at our last interview, we talked about business intelligence. We implemented Tableau, which is a business intelligence capability across the enterprise here at HRSA, and we've implemented it into our grants oversight system so that we can use predictive analysis with our data. So what we did is, we, after implementing the tool, we provided training for all like our project officers, our grants management specialists, and since we now have these tools, the programs are very excited about the new possibilities. So we now have a business intelligence user group so that the different folks from the program can talk about different ways that they're using the business intelligence capabilities. And we're in the process of upgrading our data warehouse. We revamped that, so we're going to be implementing business intelligence capabilities with that system as well. And then our goal is to eliminate static PDF reports and provide flexible dashboards so that they can be used internally at HRSA as well as externally by our customers. So, for instance, different state and local governments or healthcare organizations can access the data and use the data more flexibly.
All right, so there's a lot to unpack there. Let me go back to WannaCry for a second. I spoke recently at a conference about cybersecurity. I was moderating a panel and mentioned that the government definitely deserves a pat on the back for how it reacted to and survived WannaCry. When did you find out that WannaCry was a problem? And walk me through what happened, generally speaking, next. Was it a CIO call? Was it a update to systems? Give me a sense.
We started to see indications early that Friday. And then what had happened was the CISO community, as well as the ISSO community, they started to have calls about what was going on. There were different calls at the HHS level. In fact, the Secretary of HHS was on a call on Friday evening about WannaCry. And we actually dispatched some of our security folks down to HHS. And then we had different conference calls, probably about every 5 hours in terms of what was the status. And then there were calls that were occurring internally within HHS and also externally with different healthcare providers to make sure that they were aware of the WannaCry as well. So like I said, the communication was just really outstanding internally and externally.
What's interesting about this, you said Secretary Price was on one of the calls. That's amazing in the fact that 3, 5, 7 years ago, no secretary, no deputy secretary probably would ever be on a call about cybersecurity. How does this relate back to the work you guys have been doing over the last, you know, year and a half, 2 years around cybersecurity, whether it's training or new tools and new capabilities?
We're working on CDM, and we've implemented new tools. You know, of course, over the years, what you're doing is you're maturing your processes and procedures, such as understanding what your inventory is, making sure that everything is locked down. It's also about the communication because, as I mentioned earlier, security cuts across in different groups and making sure that there's that open communication and collaboration. So you have the systems that we're responsible for managing within HRSA, but just because we outsource or contract out different capabilities to vendors, it doesn't mean that we're not responsible for them. So, for instance, we had to reach out to the vendor that provides the National Practitioner Data Bank. We have close communications with the organization that's responsible for the organ procurement system. And so what we've done over the years is that we've incorporated them, their ISSOs for these contracted out systems, participate in our bi-monthly meetings with the ISSOs within HRSA so that when these situations occur, you already have that working relationship with the different organizations that you need to reach out to. And it just worked out really well because of the ongoing communication.
Again, an excellent news story. I really do appreciate you sharing it with us because I know cybersecurity can always get a little sensitive. One of the other things you mentioned when you kind of went through some old and new priorities is the data warehouse effort. Talk a little bit about how you're going to revamp that.
So we're going to be implementing, like I said, Tableau and business intelligence capabilities. So we have these, I guess, like really long static reports in the data warehouse. And so we want the information to be more useful for internally within HRSA as well as externally. So by creating these different dashboards, you can actually look at the information in the data warehouse. And then if you need to join information from other data sources such as Excel spreadsheets, or if you're working with, for instance, a state or local government and they have data and you're trying to marry that data with HRSA's data, that you'll be able to have that flexibility to do that.
I think people sometimes underestimate the importance of being able to marry that data and having that flexibility. Is there a timeline around the data warehouse?
Probably in the next year and a half. We just received the funding. We already have a contract in place that provides support for the data warehouse. So I would say probably in the next year and a half to really revamp the entire system.
All right, and you were smart. You answered the question. There's already a contract in place, so now the vendors who listen to my show will not bug you too much. I want to jump forward to another big effort around data and something that you guys are doing, I guess, with the Veterans Affairs Department. Talk about that data sharing effort.
Our health center program here at HRSA was interested in sharing information with VA. And so for our health center program, we actually support 1,400 health centers operating at more than 10,000 sites. And VA is responsible, of course, for the hospitals. So VA wanted to know what health centers existed within geographic regions. And then for us, it's also helpful for us to know about their hospitals. So when you're looking at the type of resources that exist within a geographic location, you can get all the data as opposed to just looking at one data point. And so this will give us the ability to overlap the data and make more actionable decisions. Now, VA wanted access to our health centers so that they could decide where to actually build new hospitals. And so anyway, that's the effort that we have been working on with VA.
And this is as much as a data sharing effort as it is a relationship effort, meaning where you can offer veterans or offer others access and make it easy to find. Will this eventually go into some kind of interactive map, or what's the end result that we're looking at?
Well, we have a tool right now called Find a Health Center, and so that's part of the data warehouse, and part of that redesign effort will look at different types of information that we can receive from other agencies and how we can potentially overlap that data.
All right, so and then real quick, the timing on that as well?
I would say for that probably a year and a half to 2 years.
Okay, so something to catch up with you on and maybe next year or the year after. We're almost out of time. Before I let you go, there's two other pieces I just definitely want to touch upon. One is the grant system that you guys, reaching out to the external customers that you have around usability. Talk a little about the grants oversight system.
We improved the usability of our grants oversight system. It's called the EHB, and it's used by 50,000 external users. And what we did in February is that we deployed a new homepage to make it easier for our grantees to use the system. For instance, some of our grantees may have different types of HRSA grants, like we have our health center grants, we have our Ryan White HIV and AIDS grants, we have maternal and child health programs. What we did is we revamped the homepage so that we could consolidate the view of all the different grants that a grantee may have at HRSA, so that makes it really easy. And then what we did is we created a pending task for them so that when they log into the system, they know what things are outstanding. So it just makes it really easy for our grantees to interface with HRSA, and we included videos to provide help for our grantees because they don't log into our system on a daily basis. So we just want to make sure that we have videos so that they can have the information at their fingertips as opposed to having to contact our contact center. And so we've been working on that as well as implementing some mobility for site visits. So we perform a lot of site visits within HRSA, and so we're implementing mobility for our site visit capabilities.
All right, very good. Sounds like there's a lot going on, so we'll have to catch up with you again, but unfortunately we are out of time. I'd like to thank my guest, Adrian Burton, the Chief Information Officer of the Health Resources and Services Administration in the Department of Health and Human Services. Adrian, thank you so much for taking the time today.
Thanks, Jason.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, Ask the CIO, Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.